If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Well, I know a man, and he's always smiling. I know a man, and he's always smiling. It looks so easy, he could be flying. I know a man, and he's always smiling. I said, how do you do it? You must lean into it. Is that smile for real, or is that just how you feel? And how do I find this way that you're living? He said, kindness. Kindness is my religion. Kindness. Kindness is my religion. And he's always smiling. And he never talks down. And he doesn't talk up. He never talks down and he doesn't talk up. Yeah, he needs no weapon, his weapon is love. He never talks down and he doesn't talk up. No. I said, how do you do it? And do you lean into it? Is that talking for real or is that just how you feel? Well, it blows my mind, this love that you're giving. He said, kindness, kindness is my religion. Kindness, kindness is my religion. Oh, kindness is my religion. I know a man and he's always smiling. He said once I was wishing for a better condition. It was pure intuition. What an easy decision, a cure for division. Who could deny this loving position? Well, come on and try this good tradition of kindness. Kindness is my religion. Well, kindness is my religion. Well, kindness is my religion.
You've been listening to Kindness from Oliver Wood's recently released album, Always Smiling. You may know Oliver Wood as one half of the Wood Brothers, the other half being Chris Wood, who also plays in Modesky Martin and Wood. Always Smiling is Oliver's first solo record, but this savvy music veteran isn't a newbie and is well-versed in blues, folk, gospel, country soul, and Americana music. This record shines a bright light on Oliver's songwriting prowess, his unique guitar playing, and his very memorable voice. I caught up with Oliver to talk about the record and wondered if this record gets made or even put out, if not for the pandemic.
I don't think so. I mean, that was really what opened the gates and space for me to do it. Because normally the Wood Brothers has me on tour a good part of every year and every month. And then I have a family at home and I don't see that I would have had the time and energy to do that. So yeah, it just kind of happened. So was one of the positives.
So you were writing this material and it sort of emerged organically from my understanding, so that you had written some songs, you had put some stuff down, and then you had invited several people to sort of join you on this record. And it's quite an amazing list of people, aside from Jano, who's in the band. But there are lots of other great musicians. Did you have specific tracks in mind when you reached out to Susan Tedeschi or John Medeski? Oh, that rhymes.
Yeah, I got all the Eskies. It's a little bit of everything. So Susan Tedeschi and John Medeski were sort of more afterthoughts, where, oh, I've got this song, it's just about finished, what's the finishing touch? And in both of those cases, I called those people to add their magic to it. However, some of the other collaborations that you're talking about, some of them happened pre-pandemic. So for instance, I co-wrote some songs. Phil Cook was a co-writer for the song Soul of This Town. And he came to Nashville, and which is where I live. And so that's the thing, is I invited people when they came through town that were friends of mine who I wished I could play with and never have time to, or wish I could write with but never have time to. I would have them come through to our studio. And so Phil Cook was a collaborator pre-pandemic. Carsey Blanton, same thing. Chris Long, my old bandmate from my old band King Johnson. These are people who came into town pre-pandemic, and we wrote songs. But, you know, I didn't really have an outlet for them. I just wrote them and then, you know, didn't know what to do with them. Just did it for the pleasure of writing and for the luxury of connecting with other artists, you know, and it's just inspiring. So those things happened. And then, you know, once the pandemic started, I was sitting on these songs. Some of them I had already recorded, and some of them hadn't even got started yet, but they were beautiful songs and ready to go. So anyway, I had these songs that were in various stages of completion, and I had all this time on my hands. The Wood Brothers we are lucky enough to have our own studio. And so I have this little playhouse where I could go and experiment and try stuff. And I started finishing the songs that I had started, and then working on some new songs and just having all that time in my hands. And I really did, you know, some of the early songs, the song Soul of This Town ended up being a single. I just was like, well, this is a great song and it's done. I might as well just put it out in the world. And then a couple of months later, I just had a handful more, and my manager was like, why don't you just do an album? And I was like, yeah, I've got plenty of time. Let's just do that. So
The album formerly known as Wood, like just one of you, right?
Yeah.
Bad joke. I apologize. Is that a regular thing for when people are in town to stop by and hang out and record? Or is that something that you sort of pre-plan? Because I would imagine lots of musicians come in and out of Nashville on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And friends or not, or acquaintances or what have you, that, you know, you may want to get together if they have time, if you have an idea to put something down. Is that something that happens because you do have a studio? Is that something that happens fairly often?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that we've, even with the Wood Brothers, we've made a point of that. I mean, I remember a couple albums ago with the Wood Brothers, we were in the studio working on a song for a record, and Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks were in town playing a show, and we were like, hey, would you guys want to come play on this song? And they did. So sometimes you just, you know, with our musician friends, our schedule are scattered all over the place, all over the country, and they're either on tour or living in different cities. So it's fun to connect, and that's kind of one of the ways to do it. It's just, hey, come hang out and let's play some music, because who knows when we'll see each other next, you know?
There are several different twists and turns on this record. in terms of songs and lyrics, especially. Oliver Wood has his own sound that I think fans are very familiar with if they're Wood Brothers fans, whether it's the way you sing or the way you play guitar. I think they're both synonymous with Oliver Wood. But the record itself takes many twists and turns lyrically from Get the Blues, which is a song about the struggles of what we're living through right now, to songs like Roots and Molasses, which focus on brighter topics. Is it important for you to sort of spread the wealth of knowledge and inspiration around when writing lyrics?
I don't know. I think it's just one of those things that is not planned out. It's one of those things that, and I think this is probably true of any creative, is that you know, you're constantly taking things in from your environment and the atmosphere of what's going on. And whether you mean to or not, they come out in the songs, you know? And so I don't think I had any preconceived ideas of what, you know, how to distribute lyrical information on the record. I just think, well, here's a song. This is what I'm feeling today and I'm writing about it. And I think that's what most of us do. We're just writing at the time. I mean, unless you're going for a conceptual album of some kind. I think, but your question's good. And I feel like musically, sometimes I'll do that. Like, okay, do we have enough? Do we need a ballad? Do we need more fast songs, or, you know?
Yeah.
But I haven't thought of it in terms of thematically, like lyrics. I think, you know, I was going to add is that this happens every time I've made an album or we make albums, is that we finish the album and then your publicist needs an angle. Like, what's this album about? And I'm always thinking, well, that's ridiculous. We didn't write this album about anything. You know what I mean? But then I look back at it, and this happens every time, and I always see like a theme to the album. You know, I always see some, or at least one, if not a few themes, but it holds together. And I think it's because of what I said before, is that while we're writing, we're taking stuff in, and we don't necessarily have to know what we're writing about, but our subconscious actually does.
And in this case, it's the title for the record, right? Like, no matter what, the theme is to always be smiling in some way.
Well, I mean, you could say that. I was thinking in more general sense, that's the aspiration. You know, that's right. That's the goal, or that's who, you know, I think in that song, which is called Kindness, and that's where that title comes from.
Yeah.
Always smiling. I think I was writing about somebody that I looked up to, or some people, you know, it could be a group of people who I think of as, it just seems like they're always smiling and lifting us up. And that's how I want to be. That's an aspiration.
Happiness Jones, right? From One Drop of Truth.
Yeah.
There are a couple of gospel covers on the record. The battle is over, but the war goes on, and Climbing High Mountains, Trying to Get Home. Do gospel tunes remain a constant in your performance and in the thoughts that you want to get across?
Yeah. I mean, I think gospel, you know, I don't consider myself a gospel music player, but I love some of the music and the positivity in a lot of gospel music, and spirituality too, but especially the kind of spirituality that unifies, you know? So I don't know. I think a lot of these songs really are fun to play and inspiring to play and have positive implications that make it just feel good to play and sing those songs and to hear them too. So I love that tradition, and I definitely try to mix it in, you know, whether it's a cover or original music. I'm sure it affects my it's made a big impression on me always.
Can we talk about your guitar chops for a sec? Because you're one of the few people who play an acoustic guitar as though it were an electric guitar in many ways, but there is also the picking that goes on. Is that something that you spend a lot of time doing? Do you, there's a guitar hanging behind you, actually. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you're chained to at the hip? I mean, is the acoustic guitar something that you're constantly practicing or getting better at your craft with?
Well, I mean, I think it's accurate to say I'm sort of 50-50. I play electric guitar a lot. And so I think I'm probably better on the electric guitar, but I love the acoustic guitar too. And then I love, you know, there's, if you're for the real guitar nerds, there, we know that there's plenty of things in between acoustic and electric. Like there are acoustic guitars that you plug in or that you put a weird pickup or on, and then it sounds kind of like an electric guitar. And I really like really kind of cheapo electric guitars plugged into crappy little amplifiers and things like that. So I don't know. I'm always looking for any kind of sound that's inspiring. And sometimes I think we, as artists, we need to get out of our box a little bit, or comfort zone. So just having a guitar that's in a weird tuning or that you're unfamiliar with, but it has a sound that's inspiring to you that sounds fresh or new or whatever. I'm always trying to find something like that, and that always helps the writing and the playing feel inspired and new, you know.
When you sit down to write a song with a guitar, are you writing lyrics at the same time as you're writing chords and melody, or is that two separate experiences?
I've done it all the different ways. So last night, for instance, I sat on my porch and I just noodled on the guitar, and I came up with something with more of purely a musical thing, but it feels very complete. Now it's just like lacking words. And sometimes I've had a notebook by my side and written a good bit of lyrics without having any music involved at all, just lyrical ideas. And then married it to the music later. So sometimes I think a lot of us collect musical ideas and lyrical ideas, and then sometimes the other half comes, or other times we try to marry things together. Like, ooh, I have this melody that might go well with those lyrics. But then, like you said, you know, sometimes you sit down at your instrument and you have both the words and the music come at the same time. So I don't really have one method, but I do try to, anytime I have an inspiration, I try to make some record of it, because I'll probably use it with something else, you know.
What inspired the use of the chicken coop as a musical instrument? Not often played, but it is played here. Yeah. How did you decide on using the chicken coop as sort of a percussive instrument?
Well, it's kind of an homage to a mentor. I lived in Atlanta, Georgia for 20 plus years and played music. And that's kind of as a young musician where I came up playing and learning and, you know, being the young guy in the band and learning and just learning from people who would become my mentors and possibly my most valued mentor is a guy named Donnie McCormick. And he was not directly a mentor. He's just somebody I admired, but I understood art in general the best by watching him. And he passed away, but he was a great singer in a band called Eric Quincy Tate in the 70s, which was a band that was on Capricorn Capricorn Records, along with the Allman Brothers and Wet Willie and those bands. But he was a singing drummer, and in his twilight years, he was not willing to drag a drum set around anymore. So he had this little chicken coop, which if you don't know what a chicken coop looks like, it's kind of a little box. It almost looks like a lobster trap or something, but it's made of plywood and then dowel slats, to like a little mini chicken jail. And so I think it was part novelty and ridiculousness, but then it was actually something he made great music with and learned to make cool percussive sounds on. And anyway, you know, probably the only chicken coop player I've ever met. So I, at some point, wanted to keep that tradition alive. So I got a chicken coop for Jono that we could have around the studio and for inspiration. And it got used quite a bit on this record.
That band was actually called Coupe de Ville. Did the name come from the...
Well, so that band was just a fun little project that I played in with Donnie McCormick.
Right.
And that band was called Coupe de Ville. That was not his claim to fame. That was just a little side project that we had. In fact, there's a painting behind me that is Coupe de Ville right there.
Oh, great.
And
very cool.
But anyway, which he painted actually. But anyway, yes. So the chicken coop as a percussive instrument. And again, that's another, the other layer of that thing, that idea of using something like that. It's kind of like I was talking about with the guitar and how to inspire ourselves as musicians. Sometimes, you know, you need to get out of your box. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, say you're a writer, this is a weird analogy, but let's say you just find this pen that just like smells good and it like has this perfect flow of ink, and something about it just makes you feel different, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like that. So give a drummer who's just comfortable at a drum kit some weird chicken coop. Okay, make some music with this. Well, something cool is going to happen because it's going to be very childlike, and you're going to discover things, and that's a really fun way to create music. You know, it should be like that.
The album cover features a very cool Mardi Gras inspired skull, I want to say.
Not Mardi Gras. It's a sugar skull, which is inspired by the Day of the Dead.
Okay.
Celebration. So that's more of a Mexican tradition, I believe.
Yeah. And your wife had something to do with creating it, right?
Yeah. So my wife has gotten into carving lino cuts and printing, making pieces of art from prints that she comes from, cut out a piece of wood. And yeah, so that's another thing that probably wouldn't have happened unless I was making a solo album, is have a collaboration with my wife too. So, you know, collaborating outside of the Wood Brothers has always been a challenge because it's such a full-time thing.
Yeah.
And again, the pandemic opened that door for me.
Let's talk about the Wood Brothers for a second, because as I mentioned, you guys were the last band I saw pre-pandemic here in Toronto at the Mod Club, which unfortunately has closed its doors.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
So unfortunately, you won't play that barn again when you come up here. But this has been a great place for you to play. I mean, that room was jammed like I've never seen it before when you were here. What's next? Are you guys working on a record? Are you getting ready to get out there soon? What's the plan for the brothers?
Well, we just played our first tour, got home last week, and that was the first tour since we got shut down for the pandemic. So we are back, and starting in August, I have a solo tour in July, but then once August gets here, we basically are slammed for the rest of the year, catching up on a lot of the shows that had to be postponed or canceled during the pandemic. So yeah, we're about to get busy again. We're about to start writing songs again. I mean, we're kind of always writing songs. So I wouldn't say we're officially working on a record, but technically, you know, some of the songs that we're working on now will probably end up on a record. Yeah, we don't have a Wood Brothers pandemic record, but we'll have a post-pandemic.
What's good, though, is that, you know, of all the music that's come out of this pandemic, and there's been some great records and people really having the time to write music during this time, we haven't had any of these silly, you know, pandemic-specific songs, you know, like I was at home alone. by myself. You know, there's none of that has come through yet, which is probably good, but the inspiration of having the time to sit down and write music that you hadn't necessarily had the time to concentrate on before is tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much for taking the time, Oliver. I'm if it hasn't come across yet, I'm a huge fan of your work, and I really appreciate that you took the time out today to talk about this record, and strongly encourage everybody to check out Always Smiling, because it's a great record. Quintessential Oliver Wood, for sure. Thank you, sir, for taking the time.
All right, thank you very much, and we'll catch you later.
For more on Oliver Wood, visit oliverwoodmusic.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another song from Always Smiling. Here is Get the Blues, featuring Susan Tedeschi.
Lord, won't you save us? Hey, Lord, why you gotta plague us? How we gonna last much longer? Lord, you could have made us stronger. Now we're lost in our world, waiting on you to come back home. And if we're gone, by the time you do, Lord, you're gonna get the blues. Lord, can't you hear us? Dear Lord, maybe do you fear us? Get the blues. Get the blues. Where's you gonna get the blues?
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.